All right, so I wanted to do this last session. Is this the final class of Bina this summer?
Yeah.
This is it. What an honor. So to finish up the series that we've been doing in the kitchen to discuss some knives issues. Knives is a very complicated issue. So I really primarily want to bring out all of the ideas, all of the basic principles. There's certainly a distinction between what we can do l'chatchila, and if it did happen, how we'll handle it. But at least the more that we're familiar with the issues at hand, the better we'll be able to tackle them. And I hope if we get through this quickly, which I'm going to try to do, we'll quickly review some of the things we've done from the past too. I got a question. Someone asked me about cooking parf things in a pot. And it was about 10 days after we'd given the whole class on it, and I had to like stop and like work through each detail. It's like hard to keep it straight what you can and can't do. So it's probably worthwhile if from my perspective, that's what it takes every time I go through it. I'm sure if you're just listening to it once, it would be helpful to quickly go over that again. Okay, as we've gone through a couple of the questions, which the common questions which you always have with knives. The fruit in the supermarket question. This comes up all the time, both in our local supermarkets and more importantly when you're traveling. You're in the middle of Yehupitsville, North Carolina. You stop off at a supermarket to buy some stuff, take the kids to the bathroom. They have those cut fruits. Are you allowed to buy that or not? There's no mashgiach. There's not a Jew for 50 to 100 miles. Forget about a mashgiach. Can you rely on that? Are you allowed to buy those cut fruits and vegetables? Can you buy your cut carrots in the bag that they sell and manufacture? What's the deal with all those things which have been used by knives and cut? Can you or can you not buy them? And then case number two, which we'll work through, I cut my carrots with my meat knife. I was cutting Thursday night, getting ready for Shabbos. It was just a meat knife. I hadn't used any meat necessarily in the recent past, but I cut up all these carrots. I had a bunch of extra ones. I put them in the fridge, and now I want to use those same carrots in a dairy dish. So does the fact that I use a meat knife to cut the carrots on Thursday night while I was getting ready for Shabbos, does that affect my ability? What's the status now of those carrots as we move forward through the rest of the week afterwards? Those are just some of the common questions which come up, and hopefully we'll be able to work through. Okay, so the issue with I didn't even put onions in there. Onions is the other question. That comes up all the time, but it's easier just to start to out meat, and then it's easier. But we'll get to that as well. Before we even get to really cutting onions with knives themselves have a special status unrelated to onions. Knives, they're not; those two are not married. We don't only discuss the status of knives when it's related to sharp foods. Knives themselves have a couple of different unique elements to them when it comes to everything that we've been discussing. So let's first talk as knives affect products and then how it affects them when it combines with sharp foods, what's known as a davar harif. So as far as knives go, first of all, you need to know that knives are not only knives. Knives are anything that's sharp and used to cut. So the same questions that we're going to be discussing, the same issues as far as actually using a knife, would apply to your slicer, chopper, grater, your mixer, any of those things that you use, your blender, those all have the same questions. And if you use a blender for actual meat or for onions or for all those things, everything that's going to be discussed applies the same to the status of your blender as it does to the actual knife itself. So what's the status? How do we treat knives? So knives have a unique element as far as transferring and absorbing taste. So everything that we've been discussing as far as pots go, both with cooking and with baking, the assumption that we've been making, our starting point, is that when you cook meat or dairy products in a metal pot, through the cooking process, just like taste comes out of the actual food and it mixes with the other food items in the pot, the taste also absorbs and embeds itself into the actual walls of the pot, at which point it can subsequently come back out, affecting the subsequent foods that you cook. So knives have a unique element as far as transferring taste, and that happens in one of two ways. Number one is that knives are considered to have a residue on the surface. So this is a different issue than pots. Pots are generally assumed to be clean, and therefore the only issue that we're concerned with pots are the food, the taste that's been absorbed into the walls of the pot, so to speak. It's not there on the surface, it's actually in the walls of the pot, that when you subsequently cook, that taste which is in there will come back out. Knives, because of the sharpness of the knife and how they're serrated, they're traditionally hard to cook. Certainly today we're better at cleaning knives than we were 100, 500 years ago, where they were really schmutzig, but knives generally are harder to clean and have more of an assumption of being a little bit dirty because of the residue on the knives. And therefore, the 24-hour rule, which we apply on all of our utensils, 24 hours goes by, what happens to taste that's absorbed in the walls of a pot?
Stale.
It's not going to affect anything anymore. We don't use the pots anyway because we don't want to get confused, but if you ever use the pot that's been more than 24 hours since its previous use, the taste inside is already stale. It can't affect anything and we're safe. We've discussed that. We'll go over it again, but that's the basic rule. That's not necessarily going to apply to knives because there's an additional concern with a knife that the actual surface still has some form of a grease, some sort of a residue, a thin, filmy residue from its previous use, and therefore you're more concerned. Now, if you know that it was clean, you washed it yourself, it's been to the dishwasher, you can't assume that it's clean. But there, it's worth it to start the discussion by saying the assumption is a knife is not clean unless you know that it's clean, as opposed to most pots of which it goes the other way. Most of our pots you can assume are clean unless you knew that it wasn't. A knife, the assumption is, unless you know that it's clean, you have to assume that it still has some sort of a grease that's been used, some sort of little bit of a residue. And therefore, that's not going to help with the 24 hours. And this is not even dealing with the taste absorbed into the knife, as I just mentioned. This is the point, the first element, the unique element to a knife, has nothing to do with the taste that's absorbed. It has to do with the fact that we sometimes have to be more concerned with the residue on the outside. This is relevant when it comes to the supermarkets, this discussion, because there where knives, you quickly rinse it off, is not going to do it. If you were to be suspicious of a supermarket or a person, a non-Jew, someone not observant, just taking knives around the kitchen, that residue will stick on the knife and transfer, therefore, the food from one item to the next, much more than other types of food items. So in our own kitchens, it's not as big a concern because we usually do clean our stuff. As long as you're taking it out of the drawer, it's been to the dishwasher, it's clean. But when we discuss these other types of questions, where I went here, I went there, can I eat this, can I eat that, in those other circumstances, there's much more of a concern of the knives because they're harder to clean and you have to assume that there's often residue in there. So we'll get to some of that stuff, but that's just issue number one that needs to be addressed. Okay, the second issue is what's known as duchka desakina, an Aramaic phrase which means the sharpness of the knife. Now, or any type of blade, slicer, or chopper, that pressure, that when you cut something with a knife, it exerts a pressure, is one of the methods of transferring taste. So I'll just take a step back. Everything we've been speaking about, the assumption that we've been making is that taste transfers. You have a piece of meat, again, let's go back way back to the beginning. When you cook, the Torah prohibits cooking meat and milk together. So if, let's say I did that. I have a pot of milk, or somebody did that. You have a pot of milk, and you put it, you know, I say that because one of the prohibitions of basar v'chalav, not just eating it, you're not allowed to cook it, even for somebody else. There are three prohibitions of basar v'chalav. You can't cook it, you can't benefit from it, and you can't eat it. So even just experimenting it is asur midaraisa. You're not allowed to cook meat and milk together. The only time this ever comes up in a person's kitchen where you really need to be careful, sometimes it's really highly involved. Once someone was mentioned to me, like even just when you're throwing things out in the sink, sometimes you have hot foods, even in if you're just throwing them out, if they're really still hot enough to cook, there would be an issue of not making sure that they're meat and milk different. That's so relevant, practically speaking. But in any case, it's a prohibition. So if somebody out there, a non-Jew, were to take a pot of milk, boil up a piece of meat, and then they separate the milk and meat, so now they have their meat separate and just the milk, after it's been cooked, is it still prohibited? Yes, because once they're cooked, the taste transfers. The meat is now full of the taste of the milk. The milk is now full of the taste of the meat. You all know this from our kitchens. That's how we cook. That's why we cook things together, different flavors. So the halacha recognizes taste transfers. And just like it transfers from the food items, it transfers into the pot. You need some form of a method, a halachic mechanism, to get food to transfer its taste. If you just put a non-kosher piece of meat on your plate, there is no transfer. The fact that there's a non-kosher piece of meat on the plate, if it's just cold, nothing happens. All you do is you take your piece of meat off and you rinse off whatever residue might be there and your plate is absolutely, totally fine to eat. It's kosher 100% according to everyone. You don't have to throw it out. There's no need to do that because you need some form of a mechanism to get the taste out of the meat and into whatever it is that you're using. The primary method is heat. Anytime you use heat, a fire, cooking, whether or not it's a water medium heat, but the medium of heat causes a transfer. And that's often why we have the issues in the kitchen, because in the kitchen we often have heat, and that's where things transfer. Another one is with salt. Salt also causes things to transfer. I mentioned previously that when you soak things, if you leave milk in a pot just for 24 hours, even though it's not heated, the concept of it sitting there for 24 hours will also cause a transfer from the milk into the pot, and you will have created a dairy pot. So there are various forms of transfer, which when we talk about all the laws of the kitchen, you need one of those things to create a transfer. I'll mention, while I'm talking about this, by the way, if you're using heat, but you're not using an actual food item, you only have pots. For example, I have a milk pot and a meat pot, and they're sitting on my stove. They're both on my stovetop, and the pots come into contact with each other. So at the same time, I'm cooking, boiling up some milk for a child, or making macaroni and cheese. At the same time, I have a pot of meatballs, and the two pots come into contact. They're hot. One has milk in it, and one has meat in it. So a transfer through two metal items requires a liquid plus heat. Just the two pots doesn't cause a transfer, which is why in our ovens, we don't really care about putting things in the oven racks. You switch, first you cook meat, and then you can cook dairy. If you waited 24 hours, because even if something had spilled and became absorbed into the rack, it can't get back out of the rack unless there's a liquid. So just putting a pot on top of the rack without the liquid, the heat alone without the liquid, if it's just talking about pots, won't cause a transfer, but two food items touching each other will. Did I lose it? I'm going, that makes sense? Okay, so far, yeah.
You don't have to cash your oven for milk
and meat? That was last week. Yes. If you missed it, then the answer is yes. If you were here, then you know the answer is under a lot of circumstances, no. Sometimes yes, a lot of times no. Last week. It's all online. AskAudio.org. I'll send you the sheets if you want to. Yeah. Why do you need two glasses if you want to? If you want to. If you wanted to have to. I don't know that you have to have to. I guess because of things maybe. Imagine if it spills. You're afraid of real spillage that's sitting there, caked onto the blech. You wouldn't want. Notice if you have something that would spill over, and then you put your milk pot on that meat gravy, then that's a different story than if it just is totally clean. If it's totally clean, I don't know why you need to set the pot. Could be that I'm wrong, and I'll look into that. But. Okay, anyway, back to our discussion. So one of the methods of transfer is the sharpness of a knife. So we've had heat, and you have salt, and you have soaking. Another way of getting a taste out of a food and imparting that taste into a separate food is the sharpness of a knife. Now, the sharpness of a knife is a secondary form of a transfer, meaning it cannot do it alone. Heat alone causes the transfer. If you have a hot hamburger and you put a piece of cheese on that hamburger, because the hamburger is hot, that will cause a transfer themselves, just the heat alone. Salt alone causes a transfer. If you were to salt milk and meat together, that would cause a transfer, as the soaking. The sharpness of a knife alone helps, but cannot cause a transfer. So what that means is as follows. This is in number 2, A, B, and C. It can't do it alone, but it causes it under other circumstances. So number 1, with heat, if you combine heat and a knife, then it will cause a transfer throughout the food item. Meaning, how much taste actually transfers into a food when you use a knife? Now, we normally don't... I don't want to spend too much time on this because it's going to take us a little bit farther away from the main body that we want to talk about. When you cook something in a water medium, so the assumption is that water medium will take the taste of whatever that you're cooking throughout the entire item inside there. It brings it everywhere. Whatever is in that pot will get everywhere at the same time. If I use a knife... So if I grill two things together, let's just say I have two hot items and no liquid, so then the transfer will only take place, what's known as a kedei netila, about an inch worth, where they actually come into contact, it will transfer, but it won't transfer throughout the whole thing. So if you had a real thick piece of steak and you put a piece of cheese on it without a water medium, the transfer is limited as to how much of the meat will be affected by the cheese. But when you talk about a knife, so if you have heat plus a knife, if you were to then slice through, or if you use a meat knife and you slice through the cheese, that has the ability to transfer it throughout the food item. If this happens in your kitchen, you have a hot food item and you use a knife that was either non-kosher or dairy meat, quite a local orthodox rabbi, I want to at least get through the principles involved, where the questions are, so that more of your food item becomes a problem when you use a knife, because the sharpness of the blade plus the element of heat will allow more of a transfer to take place. I'm worried that was confusing and I ran through that, but I'd rather move to other stuff and we'll leave that there. Call your local Orthodox rabbi when you have a question. More importantly, warm, even less than Yatzo Ledesbo. Generally, what's considered hot is the temperature known as Yatzo Ledesbo, where it's hot enough, if you were to put that on a baby's belly, it would either burn the baby, or if you put your finger in it, you would pull your finger back. At the level of heat. And if it's less than that hot, we don't assume that any transfer will take place, and you don't have to worry about it. Everything in your kitchen remains totally fine. Those are always questions. Anytime you call up anyone, I had something happen in the kitchen, we'll ask, was there heat involved? How hot was it? When was the last time you used the item? Within 24 hours, after 24 hours.
But that's heat of the item itself, not heat of the hot heating elements.
Right. Right. The food item would have to have been, if the food item was just a little bit warm, plus a knife was involved, then even though normally we would say, oh, it wasn't hot, don't worry about it, but just a little bit of warmth, plus the knife will then actually have an effect on the food and will create a problem. So if you had a plastic knife, and you had a warm, whatever it was, carrot, potato that you were cutting, and even though it might not have been hot enough generally to cause a problem, if it was just a little bit warm still, then we would actually then create a fleshy potato or a fleshy carrot, depending on the rest of the circumstances that we'll learn. So there's what to be concerned. Generally, it would, if you'd put that same potato on a plate and you realize that was a dairy plate, it was a lukewarm potato that I put, it was cooked, and I put it on a, or even if it was a fleshy, it had real meat, but it was lukewarm and you put it on a dairy plate, it's really not a problem because it's not hot enough to cause a transfer. So you clean up your plate, and even though you had lukewarm meat on a dairy plate, nothing happened. Because in order to cause a transfer, you need the mechanism. You need the salt, or you need soaking, or you need heat. You don't have any of that, so it's fine. But if you use the knife, if you use a dairy knife to cut your lukewarm meat, then that would create a separate problem because the sharpness of the blade will help with the transfer, even with a little bit of heat. Does that make sense? Okay. The third area, and this is the one that we really will be focused on, if you combine the sharpness of a knife with a sharp food, then that will also cause a transfer. So that when we're going to be talking about knives, there are really two distinct topics to talk about. One is not sharp foods, it's just regular dairy knives and meat products, or meat knives and dairy products. How does the sharpness of the knife affect that transfer? That's the whole topic. And then cooking, using it for power foods. But it's a sharp food, so then the sharpness of the knife will also impact the ability to transfer out of the knife into your sharp food. So those are, and it's confusing because there are two separate topics and I'm dealing with them all at once, but those are how that works out. You have the knife issue alone, just how a knife affects foods as it transfers without sharp foods. If there's heat involved, it affects the amount of transfer that will take place and allows for a transfer to take place even with a lower degree of heat than normally is required. And then we have another issue if we use a knife for a sharp food, for onion, garlic, radishes, and the like, which we will discuss. So then also the knife, because of its sharpness, has an ability to impart taste into and both back out of that sharp food even without any heat whatsoever. Talk about that. We'll get there.
If they're
carved. Correct. If I have a fleshy knife and a par of onion, so then we'll get to that. And the ability of the knife to take the taste that's in my knife and put it into my onion, even though there's no heat, which I generally would have needed to cause a transfer, but because of the sharpness of the knife and the sharpness of the food, I can create a transfer into my onion without any heat, and now I have a fleshy onion.
Do you serve that fleshy onion with fish?
Slow down. This is just the issue. That was in case number three.
The sharpness of the knife, is that a plastic knife or a dull knife? If you're traveling, you only have one plastic knife or something. You know, the plastic knife has...
Well, the plastic, it would have. You would. This is an issue of getting the taste out of the plastic knife into Something else.
If you use your plastic knife or something hot,
so if you use your I never actually heard. I don't know. My sense is not, but I don't know that that's true. Because you do have the, and that's what's allowing it to cut. There's a certain level of pressure clearly there that's allowing a plastic knife to work better than a plastic fork. If you ever tried to cut with that, or a plastic spoon. So it could be that it is. I actually am not positive how I would answer that. That's a good question. Two plastic knives. Okay. So let's those are the principles. Let's work it through, and hopefully that will become even more clear as we go through. So letter B. So let's say you use a dairy or meat knife used to cut parv foods. Okay. So that's, I know sometimes the words are every word you know, but like, what are we talking about? So we're talking about cut parv foods. I have a carrot. I have potatoes. They're cold. I take them out of my refrigerator, and now I want to clean them off, and now I want to cut them because I'm making a certain dish. I'm using, by accident, or I take out a dairy or meat knife. Either one. Let's just take our meat knife and use that as an example throughout the rest of this. So I have my meat knife, and I cut my cold parv foods. What's the status of my carrot, of my potato, that I've now had this been cut with a meat knife? Okay, so number one, so what do we have? What are our variables? Do we have any heat?
No.
We don't have any heat. So without any heat, what's the only way to transfer without heat? I have to have a sharp food, because without heat, the only other way to do it is to combine the two things of the sharpness of the knife plus the sharpness of the food. So I don't have either one of those two things. So I don't have a particularly sharp food. I don't have I don't have any of the heat involved. So I can't get any of the taste out of the knife into the food. Right? Now, there are two issues. We deal with the residue on the knife, and we deal with the taste that's absorbed in the knife, because it's a meat knife. I've used it to cut meat just Thursday night, 20 minutes ago. I just cut a steak, cut my roast with this knife. So it's a fleishig knife. It's real fleishig. It's got taste in there from within 24 hours, and now I cut carrots just 20 minutes later. So there are two issues. Every time we're going to take a case, we have to break down. Well, do I have to worry about taste coming out of the knife? And do I have to worry about the residue that's on the knife? So here, I don't have heat. So then I look at my other two factors. What else besides heat can I get a transfer? I could either get it with the combination of sharpness of knife and sharpness of the food items, which I don't have either of those here. So that's not an issue. I can't get any of the meat that's in my knife into my carrot or potato if it's cold. So then the only issue that I have to deal with would be some residue which might be left on the knife from the fact that I cut my meat 20 minutes ago. So all that you would require to do is wash the food off. You have your carrot, rinse it off in case there had been. If you knew that the knife was for sure clean, you don't even have to do that. But assuming you're not positive, you didn't check it really well beforehand. So you cut my carrot. I cut my carrots, I cut my potatoes. It's a fleishig knife. I'm not worried about the taste coming out of the knife. I'm only worried about residue on it. If you rinse your carrots off, your carrots are good to go with your milk dish. So even though I cut my carrots Thursday night, right after cutting my meat with this knife, because it was cold carrots, cold potatoes, nothing sharp here, rinse them off, or if you knew for sure the knife had been clean, and you can use those knives, those carrots are unaffected, they remain parv and can be eaten with anything that you would like. That's because it's easy to rinse those foods off. Carrots and potatoes are easily, you need something, Okay, fruits or melons don't have that luxury of being able to be washed off. You can't wash off a watermelon so well. It doesn't, it don't work, because when you wash it, it's just sort of whatever, if there would be something on it, it would be just as likely to push it further into the watermelon than it would be to scrape it off. So since you can't really rinse them with water, so there you have a concept called a greda, in which you basically just take a parv knife and you could just scrape the surface a little bit, and that would take care of the same problem. Because again, since it's a cold melon, it's a cold fruit, whatever it would be, the only issue that we would have is that the knife might have still been dirty and had some type of residue left. So in order to clean that off, rinsing is not really the best idea. So you take any parv knife, you could just scrape it once or twice, and that would take care of whatever is there, and you don't even have to slice off, so you can do that also, but even just scraping it would be sufficient.
But as long as you know for sure that your knife is clean, you don't have to.
Yeah, anyway, if you know that it's clean, yeah. This is where you know, you just literally had cut your meat 20 minutes before, you're not concerned, maybe you quickly ran it under the water, but you didn't really look at it. So, you know, it's lying around Thursday night as you're cutting potatoes because you were planning on using it for a flavor meal, so you didn't really think. If I asked you, did you look at the knife, you'd say, I don't know, I ran it quickly under the water, but I didn't really look. So a knife, we'd say, a knife you have to assume it's really dirty. If you just rinse it off and you didn't look, you didn't pay attention because you were thinking you were going to use it for a meat dish anyway, and now you realize you didn't want to do that or you had extras, so then you'd have to rinse them off in order to use them for your, to keep them powerful or to use them for milk. Yeah?
So if someone brought over like a half a watermelon and it was from the store cut in half, could you just cut off?
Same thing, 100%. 100%. We're going to say even more than that right now. So that's the deal. So in other words, if it's something hard, a hard root type of vegetable, you can just rinse off, just rinse it off. Again, everything is cold and it's not sharp foods. If it's a softer type food that you can't really rinse off so well without either messing up the food, or if it's bread, it's a softer fruit, so then you simply have to just scrape it off a little bit or cut off a slice, and it's totally fine and nothing is a problem, because since we're not concerned with taste being imparted in, the only issue is the residue, so scrape off the residue and everything is good. Which brings us to our fruit salads, our cut watermelon, cut cantaloupe, and stuff that you go to a supermarket. So the halacha is as follows. You can generally assume that the supermarkets keep separate knives for their fruit departments. That's a general assumption. If you walk into a Kroger or a Publix, the assumption you can make is that they do that.
It's the law.
Oh, it's the law. They have to? And you certainly can. So that would be, so if you're going, you know, you're traveling up to North Carolina, South Carolina, up the coast, wherever you're traveling, somewhere in Georgia, you walk into a major supermarket, and they have a fruit department, there's absolutely no problem picking up one of those containers of fruits, because since the fruit is not a sharp item, it's fruit, it's watermelon and pineapple and the like, so there's no issue, there's no way to get the taste out of any knife. The only issue would be the residue, and we don't have to assume that there's any residue there because these supermarkets are generally required to have separate knives.
Is pineapple considered
funny? No.
Really?
Yeah. Sharp? We don't have radishes and onions and garlic. That wasn't your question?
Mine was about salads, but...
Because salads is more of a bug. You're like the salad at a store? Salad is more of a bug issue than anything there. And the dressing, technically speaking, would be the same thing. Technically speaking, well, there are a couple of issues with salads in a salad bar in a non-kosher restaurant. A, you often have onions and garlic and radishes involved in the salad-making process, which is going to add that variable, which we don't have here. You have all sorts of salad dressings and oils and spices and other things which are not necessarily okay, and you have a bug issue. So even though technically speaking the knife issue doesn't become a problem, when you're talking about buying a salad in a non-kosher restaurant, the knife that was used to chop the salad is really the least of your concerns. And even though it's technically it's fine, that element of it, let's say they didn't buy a bag, but they actually chopped their own no vocabulary when it comes to salad. They chopped their own lettuce and like whatever they did. That's a fancy word. That's the least of your problems. That's really the least of the problems I said. But when it comes to the fruit, that's the only issue.
What about like cut cucumbers, like in a little thing?
Right. So that would be the same thing. In other words, so a cucumber would be where we technically right. You could assume.
It's next to the cut onions.
Okay, so here's the issue. So the issue is this. Let me do one more point, then we get to see how we can come along. So the first issue is you can generally assume they used separate knives. The major supermarkets, for sure, you can assume that, and therefore there'd be absolutely no problem because you don't have to be concerned at all that they use the knife. Now remember also that even if they use the knives, because we're getting taste out of the knives, how long does the taste last in the knife before it becomes a non-issue anyway? Only 24 hours. So the only concern that I would have walking into a supermarket, buying a canister of watermelon, is that someone had used that knife. That this is just where the issue would be within 24 hours, and I somehow got that taste out of the knife and into my watermelon. All of which is unlikely, because they don't use the same knives for me within 24 hours. And as far as transferring the taste, almost impossible, because there's no heat involved in cutting a watermelon, and it's not a sharp food. So it really is... Okay. Now, you'll tell me that not every supermarket is careful with that law. I believe Rabbi Schwartz is known for having found the Kroger here as mixing up knives on occasion from the meat departments to the fruit department. The Publix department is always more recommended than the Kroger because of that. Kroger, Publix for sure has the whole separate thing, and Kroger's been found something like that. But even if they do that, even if they have been caught on occasion mixing up knives, let's say you go to a smaller little gas station rest stop along your road trip that's not as large of a supermarket or a small thing, and you're really not quite sure that you're abiding by every single of the legalities of having separate knives. Whether it's a smaller supermarket, it's a mom and pop shop. What about those kinds of mixed fruit where you have them in your containers and it's not as big a big an operation as a Kroger or a Publix on along the way? So even there, if they're selling a lot of fruits, it's also okay. And that is for the following reason. Let's say, even in that situation, they had used the knife for meat recently, and there was some form of residue of non-kosher meat or cheese or whatever it was that they had used it for. How many times can they cut before all of that's eventually cleaned off the knife just through the cutting process? There's only so many times that a knife, that even if it has a little bit left, only so many times it's going to cut before it's all going to be scraped off and left on whatever piece it is. So if you walk in, there's a whole aisle full of that cut fruit. So it's true, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 of those pieces in there have something on it, but taken as a whole, that's considered butthole to the, it's nullified to the canisters, all the different things of fruit as a whole. And you don't have to be concerned that the one that you have has it, that's considered nullified. So even if you're in a place which wasn't as careful and you can't be guaranteed that it had a separate knife, and maybe they did, maybe they didn't, that's still not a concern, and you still would be allowed to buy it because of the fact that whatever might have come off on the first couple of cuts is for sure butthel and a non-issue by the time you're coming to pick one off of the store to use. So that would be okay even in that circumstance as well. Yeah?
So if you're staying in a hotel and they have, like, you know, this breakfast thing, you go down and, you know, you usually just get cereal, but they have cut fruits, and they also have, like, eggs and bacon and other stuff, so
it's
better not
to eat. Great. So that's a great situation. So do we assume in a little hotel, so it's a little continental breakfast, it's in a hotel, they have a small little breakfast, we've all seen that. So do they have a separate set of knives for their fruit? I don't know. I don't think you have to or can necessarily assume that whoever cut, you know, the sausage for the other thing didn't just rinse it off and then cut the fruit. I mean, that's what we do in our own homes, right? We don't have a separate fruit knife. We take a knife, we clean it, and we cut our fruit. So I don't think there's a reason to assume in a small little operation like that they have separate knives. So therefore, what's the issue? So the knife is for sure treif. But are we concerned that taste came from the knife into my little cut fruit? So that can't happen because I need either heat or I need sharp food, which I don't have, assuming it's just a fruit platter in the morning. So I don't have the only issue that I would have would be the residue on the knife that they didn't clean it up to the standards that we would need them to have cleaned it before actually cutting the fruit. So that's a concern. That's for sure a concern. Which means that the only issue is that how much is there that I can assume that by the time they finish cutting, it's all entirely clean and what I'm getting is butthole. So if it's a smaller operation, I don't know that you could. I mean, when you go into a supermarket and you have, you know, 50 canisters of cut fruit, so you could assume that it's okay. If you have a small little bowl of fruits, and, you know, 2 feet away they have a non-kosher hot sausage that you have to assume may have used that same knife for, you can take that to your room. And so let's say that you really have nothing to eat, you want the fruit. So then what do you need to do? What you do is, if it's the kind of fruit that you could just rinse it off, if it's a cut melon, you just, you know, if you scrape the outside of it, that is totally fine. You know, if they are big chunks, then that's okay to do. Because the only concern is the residue. Nothing actually absorbed into the food. You weren't able to do that in this situation. And you can do that if you wanted to do that. And that's totally fine if you cut away the edges of those fruits. Now, if it's smaller fruits, it might not be worth it, but if they have nice sized chunks of fruit, that's absolutely fine to do. You could scrape it off with a plastic knife in your room upstairs, and that is okay.
Can you add some? Can you say, and then do you use a separate knife for the fruit? I mean, because a lot of times, like, for, like, the health department and that kind of stuff, they have to, and if you say you have a separate fruit knife,
I don't know. It's a good question. There's a whole body of halacha as to whether or not when we can trust a non-Jew if they knew why, if they know why we're asking. You know, they might be. I would imagine if any, they don't realize that you're asking for a kosher question. They don't know anything about kosher. They think you're asking because of the health issue. So what are they going to answer? Oh, of course we have separate knives.
But I might think you might be even asking for like an allergy issue.
Whatever they're asking, you know, I don't know that you can trust that answer. Even for a non-kosher issue. Now, even if you had some allergy, if you really were allergic to sausage and some worker behind the counter says, yeah, separate knives, would you eat it? I don't think so, because you just wouldn't trust the guy. I mean, if there was a circumstance where you would trust him, if you were literally, you know, you had a child who was allergic, and you had that reason to believe him because of what he showed you, so then I would trust you also as far as that goes. But generally, you know, your small little hotel operation, someone working behind the counter there, it's hard to say that they have that level of trust.
Problem often
hospital. Nice.
I'm just curious, how much fruit would have to be cut for it to be level?
You know, the number is always 1 to 60. So it's a matter of trying to calculate. Let's assume there was some residue on a knife. How many times would I cut that it would actually leave something on a piece of food, a small amount of some type of film or residue of whatever it would be? And then I need 60 times that. So I don't think it's not a huge amount. But in the supermarket, that's something. You go into the counter, there are, you know, 50 containers of watermelon and pineapple. And it doesn't have to all be watermelon. It's all, they use the same knife for all that fruit. That is certainly okay. So that's the deal with the fruit and the salads in the supermarket. And again, the salads in a non-kosher restaurant. Again, the knife issue is technically fine as far as that goes. But there are the bigger issues. Are unrelated to this when it comes to salads and non-kosher restaurants. Yeah.
So I found also on the shelves
it wouldn't change anything because it doesn't really come into contact with it doesn't actually cut the food, it cuts the can.
Can of chili or can of chicken
soup. I know what I'm saying, but then that blade that opens up a can doesn't cut fruit.
But it's going to come in contact with the fruit juice.
All right.
I don't know. Or the chili.
The bigger question is whether or not the fruit was under a hashgacha. A lot of times some of those canned fruits need to be, depending on where they come from, need to be under supervision, depending on what's in it. That would be if they're actually using canned fruits, that would probably be a bigger issue, that there wasn't other,
But if the fruit is kosher, you still have the issue with the
blade
on the can,
it
doesn't touch the food.
You don't need
a
separate can opener.
You don't really need separate can
openers. Chicken soup or chicken chili?
Yeah, in other words, the sharpness of the blade is not that it you need to cut something. In other words, if you use a can opener, you're cutting the can. Maybe something came with the cut. You're not cutting the fruit. Right.
All of the liquid from the can is still getting onto the blade.
Using the chili on the blade, and then they use that same can opener while it's still dirty to open up your fruits. All right, it's, you know, if you didn't want to eat the fruit in a hotel, that would be fine. I don't really think you're required to do that.
Bananas in the house.
Yeah, or rinse them off. Yeah. Now you can find out, you know, whether or not they're using it. All right, that's all. Oh my goodness. Let's move on. Oh my goodness. Let's move on. So that's where you're using a dairy or meat knife and you're cutting cold par foods. You're cutting your just carrots or your potatoes. What happens if they're warm? So instead of just cutting my cold potato or my cold carrot out of the fridge or room temperature, I have a hot potato or my cooked carrots, I have a hot piece of fish, my bread, it's coming out, it's still warm, and I'm using a hot knife, dairy knife or a meat knife, to cut a hot parv food. So here we have the transfer issue because I now have heat involved. So I have heat, I have the pressure of a knife. So those two issues can allow this other issue to come into play. Because now I can actually transfer the taste out of my knife into my food because I have the combination of heat plus sharpness of the knife. So the first question you have to ask is our famous 24-hour rule. Since what we're dealing with now is taste that's absorbed into the knife coming back out and possibly affecting the status of my hot carrot, hot potato, hot bread, hot whatever I have. So was my knife used within 24 hours or not? And as we know, that if the answer is no, so the taste that's in the knife is now stale. And even though, as we've learned many times, we are makbid midrabanan, on an rabbinic level, we don't use meat knives, even if the taste is stale, for dairy products, and we don't use meat pots for dairy products, even if the taste is stale. But if it's been used, you cannot have any effect on a food item with stale taste. It just doesn't have that effect. So if the taste, if the meat in your knife has not been used for 24 hours, you just start cooking on Thursday, and you haven't used your knife for hot meat since last Thursday, so then when you cut your hot carrot, even though it's a meat knife, but the taste that's in the meat knife is more than 24 hours old, and therefore even though the carrot was hot and you're using a sharp knife, what's the status of your carrot? Parv. Excellent. And this, the halacha is, you can generally assume that something is, if you don't remember, you're not sure, we always assume something has not been used within 24 hours. Unless you know for sure that it has been. As opposed to the knife, where again, the knife we're stringent. The knife we assume, unless you saw it, cleaned it, and you know that it's clean, we assume it's got a little bit of a film left on it. So with the using of pots, it's exact opposite. Unless you know that you have used it within 24 hours, we assume that you have not. And therefore, even if you cooked, you cut hot, power foods with a knife, if it hasn't been used in 24 hours, your food will remain parv. If, however, you just finished cutting your hot meat, and now I cut my hot carrots, so your status of your carrots will become fleishig. So that because a knife has its ability to impart taste because it's sharp, and you had a heat element involved, I had my hot carrots, my hot potato, so if you do cut something hot with a knife that's been used within 24 hours, then those knives, that food item should be labeled as such. You now have fleishige carrots, meat carrots. They should be eaten only with either parv or meat meals. You should not eat them with dairy.
So, if I have a knife, it's always a hotter thing to keep them palm. What if you cut, let's say, the cake, palm cake, with a palm knife? What happens
with the knife? Was the cake cut?
Was it hot?
Was it hot?
Let's assume that they were both warm.
All right, so you work it out. So you have, I have a parv knife.
Yes, and you cut dairy.
So I cut my my dairy cake. So when I cut my dairy cake, so I have if it's hot enough, let's assume it's warm enough to create that transfer. So then the transfer, if the dairiness in the dairy in the cake would transfer to the knife. Would transfer to the knife. And if you use it, then you, but it only would stay there for 24 hours. It would only stay there to affect anything else. It couldn't then, at that point, right, in any case, right, it wouldn't become, you would create a dairy knife. If you use a pair of knives to cook something that's, to cut something that's dairy and hot, right, you would create a dairy knife. Now it's dairy.
Then
it does not affect anything, correct.
That
is the same case as our cold carrot. In which, in other words, so now you have your knife will now be dirty, your knife now has dairy on it, but there was no way to get the dairy into the knife, because to get something into something metal, you need either heat, salt, soaking, or a sharp food plus a knife, which you don't have here. So now I have a dirty dairy, a dirty parv knife, but it would remain parv. And so well, after you clean it, then you could use that parv knife to do anything else with it, and it still is the status of parv.
You'd have to clean cold water and not hot.
Right. If you use hot water, then you'd now, if it was hot enough, right, then you can get it into the knife. Okay. Let's at least get through some of the davar charif. We have our sharp foods. Now, there are three unique characteristics of sharp foods which are going to make everything we've been discussing about knives even more confusing. Because that is our goal. Number one. We have discussed the first class that we had 3 weeks ago, discussed the concept which we called knots bar knots, which means a no saint tam bar no saint tam, which is a double transfer of taste. So just to quickly go over what that meant was if I have meat in a pot, so there's meat, that's real meat, real fleshic stuff, that taste goes from my meat when I cook it into my pot. Now I have a fleshic pot, but the taste in my pot has already been transferred once. It's not primary taste. It's not going from meat into food. It's not like, for example, if I cook potatoes with my meat, so then the taste of the meat goes directly from my meat into my potato. But here I cook meat alone in a pot, so the taste of the meat went from the meat into the pot. That's one transfer. If I subsequently cook a potato in that pot after cleaning it out, the taste of the meat which is in my pot that now goes into my potato is a second transfer. It went not just once, twice. That technically doesn't have any potency anymore. By the time it transfers a second time, it doesn't really have the ability to affect the potato. If you'll refer back to the first class we gave, we're still stringent not to do that on purpose, and we'll go over those details. But basically speaking, once it transfers a second time, it's pretty much, in its core, a parve potato still. Sharp foods take care of that problem, meaning they have the ability to bump up a transfer so that it's not considered a secondary transfer, but it's considered a primary transfer. Meaning, even though if I cook meat in a pot and then I cook a potato in that pot, technically speaking, that potato is still parve because it was transferred twice. So what should have followed is if I cut meat with a knife so that the meat taste went from my meat into my knife, and then I cut an onion so that the taste would now go from my knife, which is its first transfer, into my onion, which is a second transfer, and it should have left my onion basically parve, just like it left my potato basically parve. Sharp foods have the ability to bump up the level of transfer, so it's considered as if the meat went directly from the meat into my onion without the stopover through the knife. Because of the sharpness of the knife, that has the effect that it has is if it has the force of a primary transfer. So when we talk about knives, all of you who are very well still holding in the first class that we gave 3 weeks ago, who remember, but wait a minute, but secondary transfers, we don't really have to deal with secondary transfers. When it comes to sharp foods, we do have to deal with secondary transfers.
So even if it's within 24 hours, even if I cook some meat in the pot and then 5 minutes later I cook the potato, it's still a secondary transfer and it's not an issue.
It's been more than 24 hours?
If it's less than 24 hours,
what,
it is a problem.
Your potato?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Refer back to askaudio.org, the whole file. That's a simple answer to a more complex question. Okay, that's number one. That's one of the unique characteristics of a sharp food, is that it creates a secondary transfer, the status of a primary transfer. Number two, and this is the most important because it happens, this is the most relevant, sharp foods have the ability to revitalize old and stale taste. Now, the effect that has is that when we discuss cutting carrots, so even if you cut a hot carrot with a fleshic knife, the first question that I'm going to ask you, if you call up and you say, what can I do with this carrot? So I'll say, when was the last time you used your knife? So you'll say, 3 days ago. So I'll say, your carrot's fine, because the taste that's in the knife can't really transfer into the carrot in a way that it still has any effect. Don't worry about it. You shouldn't have done it, but it's fine. But if you cut an onion with that knife that hasn't been used in 3 days, the sharpness of the onion revitalizes that stale taste and brings it back to life, brings back in its, all of its vitality and its potency and its healthiness, its fullness and freshness, and therefore your onion will become we'll have to deal with that. As opposed to the carrot, we'll say, don't do it, but if you did it, it's fine. The onion will actually be able to absorb the taste from the knife. So even though it's a secondary transfer, it went from meat into the knife into your onion, and the meat taste in your knife has been sitting there for 3 days, nonetheless, cutting the onion will still be able to transfer it out of the knife and be able to give it a full status that we have to deal with the fact that it's now in your onion.
Okay, so now that knife that you hadn't used in 3 days, but you've just cut an onion, and now you're going to cut something else, like a carrot, does that revitalize taste in the knife only go to the onion, or does it now go to the carrot too, as if it has been less than 24 hours?
If you cut a hot carrot, I'm pretty sure this is, I right now it answers only in the onion, but I'm going to go back there. This is where when we combine all the different things, what happens when they all happen together, in which it's been revitalized and it was a secondary transfer and then it goes back into my knife and then I cut something else. I'm not sure about that. I'll have to put word out as far as I'm pretty sure it's just. The question is if it even if the sharpness. I'm pretty sure about that. That it only stays in the onion. The sharpness of the onion keeps it there. But it might be that that sharpness even allows it to go back. The taste that's even in the knife.
You have a cutting board. You have a card cutting board. You use a gracious knife on the onion by mistake.
Yeah, so there's that is one of the. It's already 12. If the truth is, we need. I'll have to figure out a way to do it. We need there's a big discussion. One of the discussions. There are a couple of different things that I wanted to get to, which we are not going to get to. I have. I will do one more. We'll do one more. The cutting surface, a plate or a cutting board, also how that's affected. By knives and by sharp foods is also a discussion. It's a machlokas in terms of how we deal with that in halacha. As far as also that needs to be a halacha l'maisa, is another issue. I didn't even get to where we had. There's more than this. Let me try to at least get through this, and then we'll see if we could. I don't know. Two more minutes. That's okay. Okay, so B. Now there are three considerations, which this is really what we'd have to have a whole other thing for as far as that's dealt with. There are three considerations with if it happens, how we'll actually deal with it. Number one, again, I'm just giving you the considerations, not the halacha of it at this point. Number one is what's considered sharp. The Gemara only talks about what's known as a tznon, which is loosely translated as a radish. We assume, it's a big discussion in the poskim, what we do and what we don't assume. We assume all what we would consider sharp foods, and the garlic and the onion as well, to be considered sharp. But because the Gemara doesn't specifically list all of them, if it happens, and you have a situation in which I cut an onion and I put it in my meat dish and my milk dish and all these things, one of the considerations that we're going to have to take into account is how stringent we are on other foods that were listed in the Gemara, which we generally assume to have the same level of sharpness, but weren't specifically listed by the sages as having that characteristic. That's one issue which we'll need to talk about. Number two is when if it's cooked or soaked. What happens if you fry your onions? How long does it maintain its status of sharpness after a raw onion is one thing, but what happens when you cook it or if you fry it or when they're baked? How does that affect the status as well as when they're mixtures? When you have these foods, you put onions into your spinach. What's the status of that? If I then run that through my blender or my whatever I would use, once it's mixed up, it's not just onions anymore. It's onions with a bunch of other things. How does that affect the status? Those are things that, if it happens, where you used a onion with blenders or with something that's sharp, how that affects it. Let me do one more thing, and then maybe we'll set up a time to finish this. When you do cut an onion with a knife, a classic case without all of these fancy details which needs to be worked out, I just took an onion straight out of my refrigerator, I took my knife, and I sliced up my onion. How much of the onion is affected by the meat taste that's in my knife? Even though my knife might not have been used for 24 hours, the onion has the ability to bring out that taste, and it transfers it into the knife. I have a sharp food, pressure of the knife, the transfer is there. How much is transferred? So here there's a machlokas between the Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim as to how we treat that. Ashkenazim, as we are in many of these instances, are much more machmir, we're much more stringent, and we assume that the entire onion is affected by that. So that even though you only cut the onion down the middle, your entire onion is now going to be considered fleishik and should be treated as such, not to be used with any parv or milk dishes if you want to either keep it parv or milk. The Sfaradim are more lenient and only deal with about an inch worth from where the actual cut was made, but that's the only area where the taste will actually transfer to. The rest of the onion would be okay, but Ashkenazim are generally more machmir on that and consider the entire onion meat. We are out of time. There's more onions is, you know, all these questions, the cutting board we need to discuss, and status of the knife for future things, how we deal with the cooking and how we deal with the mixtures and which types of sharp foods. So Mirsha, I don't know, what makes sense? Maybe, what's that? There's one thing at class, this has been a situation, maybe we'll just continue that. We'll do one more on some of these issues. We will have to continue. If there are other specific questions, it would be great if you wanted to email them to me, and I'll incorporate them. We can make sure we cover everything.